self-care is not selfish. Self-care, as I talked about in the book, really comes at the service of your other commitments, not at the expense. And it doesn't mean we don't have to disappoint people sometimes. We do, but there's a difference between hurt and harm. We're not harming anyone. But I think the other piece of it is when you really get down to it, self-care is hard. You know, self-care isn't just blowing yourself a kiss in the mirror or getting a massage, although there's obviously a place for that. But it's making hard judgment calls. It's getting really clear about what are my needs? What are my limitations? What am I willing to put up with and not willing to put up with? So there's a lot to it. I mean, I think it can be in some ways almost a spiritual battle to speak up for yourself and get your needs met.
From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, professional counselor and author Gina DeLappa joins the show to discuss self-care in her book, Thriving at Work. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
Today's episode is sponsored by Fostermade, a digital design and development agency committed to creating thoughtful solutions to your technology challenges. From smart user experiences to strategic programming, Fostermade employs technology as a medium for advancing your business and making human connections. Visit fostermade.co to learn more. This episode is also sponsored by Tower. We know firsthand that Tower makes version control with Git so much easier. It's a desktop client for Mac and Windows, and it helps over 100,000 users become more productive with Git, like me and Emily. They recently released a new major version with great new features like pull requests and interactive rebase. Use code CTRLClick18 and save 25% on your first year with the new Tower.
Before we get to today's episode, some exciting news for our listeners and for us, really. We are launching a Patreon at the end of this month. We're hoping this will help us better connect with our listeners and help us grow this podcast. We'll be offering rewards like early access to new episodes, exclusive content, even live chats to talk about recent episodes. We're sharing details on Twitter, so make sure you are following us there. Now, without further ado, our episode today kicks off our October schedule, which, like last year, is focused on self-care, well-being, and mental health in honor of World Mental Health Day and Mental Illness Awareness Week. We're joined by Gina DeLappa, who is a licensed professional counselor and the author of Thriving at Work, Make Your Mark, Lead with Confidence, Stomp Out Drama, Get Home by 6 o'clock. Her motto is self-care is oxygen, and she's also one of our long-term clients. So excited to have you on the show, Gina. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. Great to be here.
Thank you. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. What can I tell you? I have lived in San Diego for about 10 years now. I came out here for grad school. I recently rejoined the faculty as an adjunct, so I'm teaching a career development class at USD in the graduate program that I finished in. And wow, haven't taught in 4 years, but it is really energizing. And my biggest job is keeping up with those students, but they are sharp and upbeat and I'm loving it. Just absolutely loving it.
How did you even get started with professional counseling in the first place, helping people with their careers?
Well, I realized I was really good at listening. And I got so good at it, I realized I need a new skill, setting boundaries. Seriously, because, you know, every strength overused is a weakness. And it was sort of driving me crazy. And I thought, all right, I'm good at listening. I may as well get paid for it, right? And I'd just written a book called 401k Success Stories. I'm sure you've heard of it. Ha, ha, ha. Didn't sell a whole lot of copies, but I was proud of the book. I wrote it through my former employer, which is another story. So I finished this lifelong dream of writing a book and I felt empty. Mm-hmm. You know, turns out I wasn't put on earth to write about 401k plans. Mm-hmm. Go figure. So I was kind of at a semi-milestone birthday and looked at a lot of different options and USD popped onto the radar. And 6 months later, I was kissing my father goodbye at the airport with a one-way ticket and off I went. I have a brother and sister-in-law who live here in San Diego, and that really made all the difference. Mm-hmm. But the counseling program at USD with a career specialization was tailor-made for me. And even on the worst day ever in grad school, I never once regretted my decision, mm-hmm. never once second-guessed it. It was just that powerful and that life-altering.
I love that story. You know, before we get into our questions for you, as I noted at the start of the show, this is an episode to kick off our focus on mental health this month. I just want to remind our listeners that we are not mental health experts. We're just sharing advice, personal experiences, and strategies that work for us. And if you're struggling with your own mental well-being, please reach out to professionals. We're going to include some links in the show notes to reputable organizations with resources. So just wanted to make sure we state that at the outset. Gina, you talked about going to USC, going through that program. Then how did that lead you to writing your Ultimate Reminders advice books, going from professional career counseling to mm-hmm. writing these? I think the best way to describe them to our listeners are these like tidbit books, like the most common sense things that we always seem to forget, but they contribute to sort of a wonderful quality of life.
Well, briefly, when I graduated from USD, I took a career counseling position at a university and got to a point where I realized, okay, we're doing a very good job of helping students find employment. We're not doing so much to help them be successful on the job once they get there. Mm-hmm. You know, kids, don't do wheelbarrow races in the hall and pull up your pants and don't wear white socks. And, you know, I mean, just things that they did not learn on a college campus. So I started a company called Real World Etiquette, and I got hired on Wall Street, which was very fun, and some other places, and would give workplace etiquette seminars at various points all around the country. At some point, I missed the writing, and I had a nephew, it was my friend Gail's son, Adam, who was starting high school. Gail's a lifelong friend, and her son was starting high school at the high school that she and I attended. And it started out as just some words of encouragement for mm-hmm. him. And anyone listening can do this. You got a young person in your life, or maybe you just do it for yourself. Grab a journal, grab an empty spiral notebook, and start writing down what life is teaching you mm-hmm. and what life has taught you. Anyway, that red journal turned into a manuscript, and it became a book and a book series, and now it's a core part of my brand. So I could not have planned it if I tried.
And where did Thriving at Work come from? Because it's your latest book. You have stuff you already know and stuff you already know for college students. Thriving at Work is your latest. What inspired that?
Let me just quickly say the Stuff You Already Know books got rebranded into Ultimate Reminders because I got real tired of answering the question, well, if it's stuff I already know, why should I buy the book? And like, well, but the thing of it is I wanted it to be a gift book that you could be comfortable giving and receiving. And of course, and I was writing for my teenage nephew, so of course, teenagers know everything. So the full title of the first book was Stuff You Already Know and Everybody Should, meaning like elbow, elbow, you know this, but we know that everyone else does. It was comfortable to give and receive. Mm-hmm. Those got rebranded into Ultimate Reminders. But Thriving at Work, yes, it's my latest and greatest. I wrote that because I really saw a need and a need that I felt called to fill. I was going into companies and nonprofits and giving them my best stuff. And they were nodding and taking notes. And I didn't really have anything to leave behind that specifically addressed the workplace. Ultimate Reminders for Everyday Life came close, but it was more general. And it was meant to be more general. Thriving at Work really drills down into those four areas you mentioned, that make your mark, lead with confidence, stomp out drama, get home by 6 o'clock. And those really speak to the four elements of self-care that I really want to get across, the physical, the mental, emotional, and spiritual.
So speaking about that, Emily and I both read your book, and self-care is a major thread that runs through it.
So absolutely.
I feel like that it's almost a loaded term.
Okay.
What is self-care?
Self-care is at the core of it. I think it's getting your needs met and not making that someone else's job, but getting your physical needs met, your mental, emotional, and spiritual needs met. I had a professor at USD who taught an ethics class, and he would always tell us, Nobody can protect you like you can protect yourself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's true in the self-care realm. I can't get enough sleep for somebody else. They have to do that on their own. I can't speak up for someone else. I mean, there are times I might advocate for somebody who doesn't have a voice, but again, no one can advocate for us like we can for ourselves. Mm-hmm, so it's mm-hmm. just getting your needs met.
And I feel like Leah sort of suggested it being like a loaded term. Some people seem resistant to this idea of self-care. Why do you think that is?
Well, I can answer because I've been one of those resistant people before.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, self-care is often seen as selfish. Mm-hmm. It's seen as threatening. And, you know, if you try setting boundaries with somebody who has horrible boundaries, their first response is not going to be, thank you for doing that. I really need to be put in my place. No, they're going to fight you. And, right. you know, the world doesn't often reward self-care, at least not initially. But I want our audience to realize self-care is not selfish. Self-care, as I talked about in the book, really comes at the service of your other commitments, not at the expense. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean we don't have to disappoint people sometimes. We do, but there's a difference between hurt and harm. We're not harming anyone. Mm. But I think the other piece of it is when you really get down to it, self-care is hard. You know, self-care isn't just blowing yourself a kiss in the mirror or getting a massage, although there's obviously a place for that. But it's making hard judgment calls. It's getting really clear about what are my needs? What are my limitations? Mm-hmm. What am I willing to put up with and not willing to put up with? So there's a lot to it. I mean, I think it can be in some ways almost a spiritual battle to speak up for yourself and get your needs met.
Leah and I have talked about this recently. You know, one of the things Leah and I have done in our partnership is try to assess where our strengths are so that we can work most efficiently together. But also that means identifying weaknesses. And, you know, one of the things that I continually struggle with, and it feels like a battle. I'm kind of glad you chose that word because that's what it feels like. But self-care is a big challenge for me. Hugely challenged. I can give the business as much care as I can possibly give, but I'm at the bottom of the list. And when I finish the list and I see myself at the bottom, I'm like, and I still don't do it. So it really is something that's incredibly challenging. Even I would consider myself a very productive, kind of successful individual, but I feel like that's one area of my life where I don't have a lot of success.
Well, yeah, in many ways, I'm right there with you. And I think one thing that helps me kind of have a reality check is, okay, is what I'm about to do going to give me a sense of relief, or is it going to give me a little bit of resentment? Mm-hmm. And the older I get, the less comfortable I get with living with resentment. But there are times when, unfortunately, all of us can get almost acclimated to that feeling and resign to it. And I think we really have to fight that tendency. And it comes through in everything to how we speak up with a client or a vendor or a neighbor, whatever it is. But there's a line from Nathaniel Brandon I love that may fit in here. He said, relationships that are right for us will grow stronger if we own our power. Mm-hmm. And relationships that are toxic are better ended sooner than later. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps to keep that in mind. Yeah, I mean, something as basic as sleep. If I get enough sleep, that's going to serve my business and me. If I don't, we're both going to be diminished.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much denial is a huge aspect to the resistance. Because as Emily was sharing in her part, when we were exchanging ways on how to better a partnership and working together, it made me realize how I've always considered myself as someone who's taking care of herself a lot. Mm-hmm. But then, have I? Because there, you know, when you pause to self-reflect sometimes over why you behaved a certain way or reacted a certain way, and then you realize, no, I haven't been sleeping the amount I need to sleep. I haven't been exercising. I haven't been doing all these things that you just put off and don't think about. But then for whatever reason, because maybe I was conflating self-esteem with self-care, like I don't put myself down. So I'm like, okay, therefore I'm taking care of myself. But it could be like a death of a thousand paper cuts kind of situation.
Well, it's something that I started doing it really kind of out of necessity, because I mentioned I'm teaching, and that's a very time-consuming activity, mm-hmm. if you want to do it well. And, you know, I've got these weekly pep talks and monthly TV segments and et cetera. I started just blocking out one day a week, Monday through Friday, pick a day that works with my schedule. And that is my time to catch up and tie mm-hmm. up loose ends. And I try to schedule minimally on that day. And I find then it's built in just for me. And that gives me a chance to catch my breath and assess, okay, am I doing what most needs to be done? Am I taking care of me so that I can take care of my business and other things? But that's just mm-hmm. a real practical way. So far, it seems to be helping.
I feel like self-care, I feel like there are some fundamentals that are pretty much human, you know, sleep,
yes.
eating yeah. well, activity or exercise. But then I think it crosses over into areas that are very unique to the individual. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, you talked a lot about self-care. You even mentioned it already today. As, you know, setting boundaries is also a way of expressing self-care.
Huge.
Could you talk about that a little bit more? Because I feel like almost how you suggested it earlier, that it's taken negatively as someone being selfish or guilty or unwilling to collaborate or whatever. Like, what is setting healthy boundaries actually look like, especially in the workplace?
Okay. Well, first of all, I think it helps to remember we set boundaries for ourselves, not for the other person. So it's not about saying, you will only see me after 2 p.m. today. It's saying I need the first part of the day to get my work set up or to concentrate on projects or whatever. So it's defining your needs, mm-hmm. kind of your property lines. I think that's a Henry Cloud term. Mm-hmm. It isn't slamming the door in someone's face. It might be saying, yes, I'm happy to collaborate. I need to get this in place first, and then I'll be happy to sit down with you. Mm-hmm. So it isn't about necessarily your needs get met and mine don't or vice versa, but it's like, I'm going to include myself in the equation here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it occurs to me, this is that part of where it becomes, it's custom. It's custom to what you need. And what right. makes me think of it is what Leah was just describing. It was upon reflection, she then asked herself, like, am I actually taking care of myself? So I feel like that it requires almost this reflective aspect, whether that's a daily thing or a weekly thing, but to kind of assess, like, how did things go today or this week?
Yes.
Was there something I could have done differently? Like, I feel like that's where I'm finding opportunity to create my boundaries or my guidelines for what a healthy life looks like. And it requires me to think back, because it's, if I took care of the food and I took yep. care of the activity, I took care of the sleep, what's the custom thing that's to me that isn't just something prescriptive?
Well, yeah, and that brings up a good point. I think you can take a few minutes at the end of the day or end of the workday and say, all right, what gave me energy today? What drained my energy?
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that even just a few times, you will see patterns. And you'll see that maybe it's that one person that walks into your office and interrupts, or that person who no amount of help is ever going to be enough. And so you say, okay, I'm going to stop beating my head against that wall. You know what I'm saying? That I'm going to somehow politely extricate. I mean, we've all had that coworker, say in past lives, who calls and has 45 minutes to tell you how busy he is. And you say, you don't have time for that. And sometimes setting a boundary comes down to, okay, I'm not going to reward that behavior. Mm-hmm. Because the truth is, if I don't answer that call or I don't let that person yammer for 45 minutes, he'll find someone else. It doesn't have to be me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, my mother had a saying when I was growing up, I'll clean it up for this. But it was basically, if one of us has to be ticked off, it may as well be you. Which is, you know, you're not going to see that embroidered on a pillow, but it's there's some truth to it.
Mm-hmm. So this idea of self-care and setting boundaries, it sounds, I've talked on the show before, I'm in therapy. I've been seeing a therapist mm-hmm. for a decade plus, and it's been instrumental in my life, but it's been one of those things that I have friends and family and colleagues who it's a foreign idea of kind of,
sure.
and it feels a little, I don't know, to borrow an old term, new agey or something, somehow
yeah,
not.
Booga booga.
Yeah, exactly. But I do feel like one of the things that is powerful about your book is that all of these things apply at work. And so I feel like addressing it with this job performance angle, it almost gives permission for people to talk about this, because it's not, oh, I'm taking care of myself. It's, oh, I'm taking care of my job by taking care of myself.
Oh, right. It kind of legitimizes it, maybe, or takes away that stigma. Yeah, speaking of that, try telling your entrepreneurial family from the Midwest that you're moving to Southern California to go to grad school, like kind of like whatever that is, and, you know, to study counseling. Like, oh, horrors. And I would always say, like, but it's career counseling. Like, you know, that helped.
Legitimize it.
Tame it a little bit. Legitimize it or not, make me seem like such a freak, I guess. But, you know, I'm now looking out my window at palm trees and, like, yeah, I'm crying all the way to the ocean. So call me what you want. I'm going to sleep very well. Anyway, where were we about, oh, the workplace angle, kind of giving it a little more credence, perhaps. Yeah, because let's face it, in the workplace, if you're not performing well, there are repercussions. You don't advance, you have a negative performance review, you miss out on opportunities. Everybody wants to feel good at what they do. It's one of our basic needs, to feel competent. I love the Billy Joel line, I've reached the age where competence is a turn-on. I reached that point years ago. But yes, we all need to perform well at work. We all want to. And so self-care becomes a vehicle toward that end. And if your work is going well, your personal life is going to go well. And if work is going lousy, it's going to spill over. And we all know this. We've all had that bad job that kept us awake at night. And we bored our friends, rather, on the weekend with what a miserable existence we had. So if you get work going well, everything else in your life is going to go well.
Speaking of, what does thriving at work look like?
You know, every time I think about that, the first thing that just pops into my mind, I'm not sure why, cheerful sense of urgency. And I'll say more about that. But, and I think that characterizes often how the three of us work together, that we know what the goal is. We're all contributing toward that goal. I think we all know what our part in the goal is. And things are upbeat and they're moving along. And there's a sense of compulsion to get this done because we're both motivated to see a positive outcome. I think in a, say, in a traditional workplace, what thriving at work looks like is I have the tools and the support I need to do my best work. I'm getting some level of respect and appreciation for doing a good job. Respect and appreciation in ways that matter to me, not just here's a Snickers bar. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's got to be a meaningful reward. And we all have a different love language and all of that. Emily, I want to say just one thing about, you mentioned therapy, and I think you mentioned wisely at the beginning of the podcast about having some resources. I just want to let people know, in case they're not aware, it's pretty well known in counseling circles that it takes on average about 4 therapists before you find the right one.
I've talked about that on the show before.
Good. Yeah. I'm so glad, because if you don't know that and you strike out twice, you might think, maybe it's just me, or maybe this therapy thing isn't for me, when you're in very good company. So keep trying. Don't give up on therapy, but maybe give up on that therapist until you find the right one. And yes, when you do, they can shave years and decades off your learning curve. So I absolutely advocate for that.
You mentioned love languages, and I know we're talking about work stuff, but I think that's it's a relevant thing, because that sense of feeling appreciated or respected, it really does manifest differently for every kind of person. So I have found personally that there's like a little quiz you can figure out what your love language is. And you know, I'm the kind of person, I really respond when someone does tasks. I love people, you know, when Jason does chores, I'm thrilled. You know, if he buys me something, I'm kind of like, oh, thank you. You know, but it doesn't hit my love language, right? And it's the same way working with Leia. One of the things that makes me feel like our partnership is like humming along is when we're both like cranking and working through stuff together. But Leia is different. And so we both have to learn how to give each other the things we need when the things we need show up differently for ourselves, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think part of self-care is being able to clarify those needs for yourself and ask for them in a in an appropriate way. Leah, I'm curious, what's your love language, so to speak? What do you respond to?
I definitely like direct praise. Like, it's one of those things where it feels awkward to state, maybe even selfish, but you know, even like a small, like, that was great, or that's a good job, like, really puts me in a great mood. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Like, I very much respond to verbalizations of stuff. And that's the way, like, my sisters and I grew up. Like, we always told each other we loved each other, you know, like, all the time, even through insults, like, verbally, you know. But it was always, like, verbal. Like, it was one of those things that we tell them they're beautiful, or if we're trying to be insulting, it's really the opposite of what we're trying to say, that kind of stuff. But yeah, verbal. I like verbal
words of affirmation.
Yes.
And I think, Emily, you used the word advice, which is fine, earlier to describe my books. I try to think of it. There probably is a huge element of advice in there, but I'm not tied to whether someone follows the advice or not. It's more about encouragement and affirming people. And I know the word empower gets overused, but sometimes people just need that little psychological permission to say, no, this is not acceptable. I do need to set this boundary. Mm-hmm. And again, I'll clean this up for our purposes, but I tell the story in the book about when my 5-year-old nephew got picked last for night games and he stormed off the field and said, I don't have to take this stuff. And he didn't say stuff, but he said, he said in his little 5-year-old voice, which was, you know, I don't have to take this. But that's kind of become almost a family motto. Like, this is one of those places where I don't have to take this and I won't.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's a good realization.
So I'll put a link to the love languages in our show notes. It's a really interesting exercise just to understand what connects with you. It makes all types of relationships improve.
Yeah.
Gina, I wanted to get into some specific examples about thriving at work. First, I've been here before, what prompted me to strike out on my own, but people find themselves stuck at work or stuck in their career.
Yes.
How does self-care and some of the reminders in thriving at work kind of can help people get unstuck?
Okay, that's a great question. Well, I think there are different levels of getting stuck. There's getting stuck in your company. Maybe the company is going to be bought or sold or whatever. And, you know, you're at an impasse that way. Maybe you got a new boss and that's not what you signed up for. And, you know, you've heard the expression, people leave, don't leave companies, they leave bosses. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's a boss issue. And maybe it's just a personal level of, I have nowhere to grow, or my needs and priorities have shifted. This no longer fits for me. So one of the ways you can address all of that, and this is a tool that I talk about in the book, you might remember, it was when a massage therapist said to me, right in the middle of a massage, what does Gina need? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of wrote it off at the time. It sounded just so Mr. Rogers, like, I'm right here. You don't have to use the third person. And it was just odd. But later, she got the last laugh because I stubbed my toe memorably hard and my whole life basically flashed before me. And later that night, I thought, yeah, what does Gina need? Mm-hmm. But that's a way that you, obviously, insert your own name. Anyone listening can do this. You know, what does Emily need? What does Leia need? And it's a real kind of right brain way to break through the clutter and say, I need a new challenge. Mm-hmm. Or I need a new peer group. Or I need to go have a conversation with my boss. But it becomes quite clear what you need to do. And then it's just a matter of gathering the courage to do it. But sometimes, many times, when you're feeling stuck, I wouldn't do this knee-jerk, but many times in your heart of hearts, you know you've got to make a move and take a risk. And I think, Emily, you alluded to that when you struck out on your own.
Yeah, and I'd also add that I feel like, you know, upon reflection, striking out on my own probably would have gone a lot smoother had I been more focused on my self-care. Because I feel like if you are actually, especially that fundamental stuff, the sleep, the activity, the connection with other humans, all of those things kind of provide a foundation that when you're ready to make that move, you feel a little safer. Because I feel like I unstuck myself and then put myself in a situation where I was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
But there's a saying Harvey McKay said, you're a lot better off being scared than bored.
Ah, good point.
Or stuck. But that's a great point. When your self-care needs are met, even if you do still need to move on, you can move on with some warmth and grace rather than just taking your ball and going home.
We all
get tempted to do that sometimes, but you know, when I left the university where I worked full time, I reached a point where I was able to sit down and just warmly explain that it was time to move on. And I can be very cooperative in that process. Doesn't mean it didn't have to happen, but self-care really, yes, when that's the foundation, everything else goes better.
Mm-hmm. Well, everything still seems very tidy the way we've been explaining all of this, but...
Okay. It's not. I can assure you
it isn't. Exactly.
No.
And specifically, workplace drama seems to be an inevitability sometimes, but is it? Like, what examples are there of that and how can we avoid it or work through it?
Okay. Well, yes. I mean, we're all human beings and, you know, I think it's good to be low maintenance, but if you're in a no maintenance relationship, for example, you're probably not in a relationship at all. You know, one of you's in a coma or something. So, so I think it's fair that, yeah, there's always going to be little misunderstandings or somebody doesn't feel treated right. It's what we do with that. But I'll give you an example that came up in a workplace where I was. Our office had just put on a major career fair. And so we were meeting as a staff the next day. And one person in the room, wasn't me, clearly had done the lion's share of the work. I mean, that was part of her job, but she had gone above and beyond. Well, the boss gave this blanket praise. Thank you, everyone, so much for helping us pull off the career fair. Well, one person felt really, really slighted because she had done 90% of the work. And it didn't go over well. Whereas if he had just said, you know, well done on the career fair, join me in thanking so-and-so for really pulling all the stops to make it happen. Everybody applauds, everyone's included. Of course, it didn't happen that way, but I think it's how do I speak up when I am the one who's slighted? And there's nothing wrong. You know, if you bring up something uncomfortable in a relationship, that's not a sign of that things are bad. It's just, okay, we got to do a little course correct here. Mm-hmm. But I can do that without chopping somebody's head off or hopefully without tears. I can go and say, you know, this happened. And I think what would have been more meaningful is if we had done it this way. I mean, it always has to be solution oriented. And I think it has to assume the best about other people, not the worst. Does that make sense? I mean, yes. But to your point, self-care is messy. Relationships can be messy, you know, but embrace the mess. And another principle I try to live by is don't talk more about me than you do to me. And I think that's a way to cut down on drama. You got a problem with someone in the workplace, just go to them. Go to them privately and bring it up in a high-level way. And again, don't dwell on the problem. Let's focus on, let's get this on the right track as quickly as possible.
I think a lot of that, Leia, if it reminds you of our conversation with Amelie Lamont on fearless feedback.
Yeah,
it
does.
Feedback is that can be a tricky one.
It is. In fact, that leads really well to our next question that we had lined up for you. How do you give constructive feedback? What is constructive feedback?
Oh, constructive feedback, first of all, it has to be your feedback to give. Okay. I mean, there's certain things that I'm not going to be the one to bring up because it's just, it's not, you know, I'm not close enough to that person. I don't have enough bandwidth with that person to tell them their breath stinks or whatever. I'm making that up. But I think constructive feedback really has to be given with the other person's best interest in mind. And I think it has to be given with a little bit of humility and a little bit of grace. You have to let the other person save face. I mean, we're all doing the best we can, and it doesn't mean we don't need feedback. I have a friend, it's my former roommate from college, Jenna, who her theory is you can say anything to anyone if you just preface it with dude.
Nice.
And it lightens the mood. It's like, yeah, dude, we got to talk about that project. Or like, dude, I need that report today, you know. But it softens it. It kind of kicks the person in the butt without tearing them down, which I realize is a total mixed metaphor. But yeah, it's letting the other person preserve their dignity. And I'll give you an example. I had an assistant once in a previous job who had some body odor. And it wasn't a one-time thing. It was ongoing. So it was very awkward. I mean, you're sitting alone in a small room and it's, you know, more apparent. And I didn't tell her how to solve the problem, but I'm trying to think of how I phrased it. It was kind of like, well, before we get to X, Y, and Z, like I had my next move kind of in place. So we had somewhere else to go quickly. I just said, you know, I've noticed this issue come up and I just wanted to make you aware of it so that you could take care of it and then move on. And that was it. Never had to be brought up again. sometimes you have to bring up feedback to people that they don't want to hear. And sometimes they respond with a meltdown or insult. And you know what? You got to just let them own that. That's theirs. You don't apologize. You don't undo what you just said. It's okay that you feel that way.
Mm-hmm. I think what resonated with me as you're sharing these stories is that you approach constructive feedback by allowing the person to have dignity.
Yeah.
Like understanding you're not there to tear anyone down. And I think this is the issue with, say, like unsolicited advice, perhaps, is that it's just you feel entitled to your opinion, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's constructive. And if you kind of lead with, does this enhance or dignify this person? Will this improve a situation? I think that's a good perspective to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think you have to ask yourself, who owns the problem? And maybe you own the problem. And maybe you are feeling called to say something about it. Maybe somebody keeps repeating the same underhanded insult or something that like it's just not sitting well. You own the problem, but that does help frame how you approach it. It might just be, okay, this person maybe has a laugh that's annoying or, you know, something that rubs me the wrong way. It happens, but you realize, okay, well, that's really my thing to deal with. I can't tell that person how to live. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You figure out, okay, is this a hill I need to die on?
And
sometimes it is, but probably 80% of the time or more, it is not. Mm-hmm. So you just let it go.
So I think that's useful when you're considering to give feedback that is going to possibly be perceived negatively. But how about when you're the recipient? You've done something and someone has come to you with some negative feedback. I felt like in your book, this was something where the sort of boundaries came into play in the sense of if you have your boundaries and you know who you are and what you can own, that can help you receive negative feedback in a more non-personal way, or, you know, it's not challenging your worth. It's you can separate it from your sense of self.
Right. So how to receive feedback? Mm-hmm. I think, well, there are two aspects of it. There's the content and then there's the delivery. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the content might be spot on, but the delivery leaves tire tracks in your back. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of separate, you know, Bernie Siegel says, are you polishing my mirror or scratching it? Mm-hmm. But let's assume that there is some value to the content. I think you have to embrace it and you thank the person who gave it to you, because if they have a shred of decency and social skills, it was probably very hard for them to say. And so you say, thank you. I'm sure I needed to hear that and I will take it to heart. And it depends on, you know, the severity of the issue. If it's really serious, then you say, I didn't realize how it was affecting you, and here's how it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. I don't think everything. I mean, it might just be like a dude, clean out the lunchroom refrigerator or, you know, and then you don't need to offer something very formal. But it's pretty hard to argue with somebody who comes back with strength and humility. So, I mean, it's pretty disarming. If someone gives you negative feedback and you take it like a champ and say, that is so good to know. Thank you. Okay. You've just diffused a whole lot of argument. And then I think that's a way to make the workplace safer and a safer place to speak up. And then conflicts still come up, but they get resolved much more quickly and you could go on stronger than before.
Yeah. I think to the early part of my career when I was working for other people, like in my late 20s, and getting negative feedback and taking it so personally and getting defensive, even raising my voice to my boss. I'm so amazed I didn't get fired that day. I actually had the perspective of how dare you give me negative feedback. I'm amazing. You know, my 26-year-old ego.
We all are in our 20s.
You know, and just, and it escalated the situation. And frankly, that relationship with that boss never, like we continued to work together for many years, but it never really recovered from that. Now that I look back on it, I can really sense that I took it so personally as like an attack on me as opposed to constructive feedback to help me be better at my job from my boss who is supposed to be doing that, you know? So now that I'm older, I feel like I'm a bit better with negative feedback. And it's one of those things that, like you said, it diffuses the situation. It gives everyone the opportunity to feel heard and hopefully resolve the problem that brought it up in the first place versus what I did in my 20s, which is basically, you know, kind of damaged a relationship forever.
Well, the one thing I do want to point out, you know, as a person of color sometimes, though, is that bringing up issues and being brought issues can be heavier than other situations. And so how would you deal, or how would you get someone to deal with someone, let's say, disparaging your work unnecessarily, or like dismissing the scale or scope of your input to a project per se? And I think, like, for a lot of people of color, their reaction is to not, as actually not cause drama.
Sure, I can be the model minority, kind of. Yeah.
Exactly. But that doesn't help.
No, that just keeps the oppression in place.
Exactly. So how would someone in that kind of situation deal with that kind of drama and leave with a certain sense of dignity, as well as, like, moving something, you know, their career and their work relationships forward?
That's a big question, an important question. So somebody is dismissive of your work or your contribution. Mm-hmm. I think you can go to them privately, and sometimes you can just say more about that and get them to talk and hopefully recognize the error of their ways, so to speak, or just let them kind of exhaust themselves and say, you know, well, here's how I see it, or engage them in conversation, but say, I need to point out that I think my contributions are strong, and I think you'll agree. I've done this, this, and this. It's not helpful to me when you blah, 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 but you warmly, quietly, you advocate for yourself. I have a refrigerator magnet that says, stand your ground, it's sacred. Mm-hmm. And you don't back down. Yeah, you stand up for yourself and hopefully move that person a little further along. But meanwhile, you make your voice heard.
I feel like to be in a position to do that, for me, this just keeps looping back to that understanding what you need and knowing what boundaries you are not willing to let someone else cross so that you can advocate for yourself from a position of strength.
Yes.
And then you even support it further by making sure you're getting enough sleep, making sure you're active, making sure you're connecting with people, you know, all those fundamentals.
Yeah. And surrounding yourself with healthy people, I think, is a huge one. The same friend who had the dude theory has another statement that's always stuck with me. She said, I have my own valid way of looking at things. And you don't always have to say that out loud. But if you start with internal boundaries, the external boundaries flow out of that pretty easily. And you don't let, you know, like, I will not let myself be talked to like a certain way, you know. Yeah. If you have a problem, here's how I'd like you to handle it.
Leah, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to. So you brought it up. Do you have anything to add to Gina's advice about advocating for yourself in those situations where you feel like you're not being supported or you're being marginalized in your contributions?
It's such a difficult question to answer because I'm definitely a burn it all down kind of situation. Like, my personality is definitely the type of person who's like, I have a problem, here's the problem kind of situation. And I also understand that I'm in a position of privilege to be able to even do that. And I mean that financially. So I think if there's really only one advice I can give is get your finances in order. Regardless of where you are in your career, in your college, like, save up as much money, get your savings in order. Because when you are in a position where you're not worrying about your basic needs and you are confident about who you are, what you contributed. So this is just putting yourself in a position where you know that you're being incorrectly maligned, for example. And then you put yourself in a position where you defend yourself. It's going to be harsh to say, but if you've got the money to fall back on, doesn't matter what that means. And I mean this, like, even back when I was making not that much money straight out of college, but I always had like a F off fund. And that's what I call it.
That's the hallmark term. Yes.
Yeah. So, and that gave me the confidence where I remember even when I was in my early 20s, and this was when I, kind of similar to Emily's, where it was just like, I was tired of my job and I decided to strike on my own. I did that very strategically where I knew I had X amount of money in my savings account. And then also I had contingency where if this doesn't work out, I will get a job at X making X. So everything was always, like, for me, the more financially secure I was, the more confident I was sticking up for myself. And I think this is true if you're a woman, man, black, white, whatever you are. I think, gosh, so much I think is fundamentally tied to financial security in order for you to advocate for yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's like one of those fundamental needs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's also, say, when you're in a frustrating work situation, if you know you're setting aside whatever it is, 5-10% of your income toward
right.
that
fund,
onward and upward fund, or whatever yeah. you want to call it, you know that, okay, my days of putting up with this are limited because mm-hmm. in the background, mm-hmm. I am creating pathways for myself. I'm mm-hmm. creating options. And then there comes that point where you get that toxic feedback one time too many, mm-hmm. and you just pause and you say, thank you, because you know mm-hmm. what your next move is going to be.
Mm-hmm. It's a very empowering place to be, I think. I think yes. self-care is like the beginning of really feeling strong in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting near the end of our time. I want to get into some resources. We've mentioned your Ultimate Reminders books. We'll link to those in the show notes, and Leigh and I both can recommend them, especially I have my copy of Thriving at Work right next to me, and it's got tons of highlighted lines and little good. Sticky notes and everything.
I'm so glad.
But other than your books, Gina, what other resources could you recommend to help professionals with their self-care?
Okay, well, a couple of them. First of all, if anyone's interested in signing up for my free Monday morning pep talk, mm-hmm. just text the word pep talk, all one word, to 66866, and you'll be added to the list. So that's a way to get kind of a weekly dose of self-care and encouragement.
Positivity.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And, you know, we were talking earlier about therapy. I mean, it's easier than ever to get that. You can get that on your phone now. If you mm-hmm. Google yeah. the term online therapy, you will see a lot of links come up, including one from the APA, American Psychological Association, what to look for in that. Mm-hmm. But therapy is just talking to people, talking mm-hmm. to someone and making sense of your life. There's an app I use, a company called HeartMath, again, all one word. It's basically biofeedback device. And I'm just dipping my toes into those waters, but it helps you to develop what they call heart coherence. I don't know if I could describe it, but it's a way to lower your physiological and emotional mm-hmm. stress. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, again, a big picture way. There's an app called AutoSleep that I use, and I wear my Apple Watch at night in it, but it monitors my sleep, and that thing knows if you had dessert last night because it's going to show up in your sleep. I mean, it right knows if you went to bed mad. I mean, mm-hmm. it just knows, but it's a way to keep yourself encouraged and motivated. So those are a couple that I can strongly recommend that I think will make a big impact.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gina, what's your final advice for someone struggling to make self-care a priority?
I would say start small and start with something that you can do even every day. And I'm going to go out on a limb. We mentioned how booga booga therapy can be. Here's another one, affirmations. They're so Stuart Smalley. I know that. They're so corny.
Stuart Smalley.
But I'm telling you, they make a difference. And as best I can, every morning, I write a page or two of affirmations, just whatever flows out. It's a way to get you to listen to yourself. I am setting myself up for success. Mm-hmm. That's one that I often repeat. Or I solve problems brilliantly. Whatever you want to strengthen or improve, but start small and keep track of how you feel afterward, after you mm-hmm. speak up for yourself or after you clarify a need or a boundary. And I think when you start to see that those early returns, it will inspire you to keep going. Or, you know, you get a great mm-hmm. night's rest. Man, you feel like you can do anything. And then there's your motivation to continue that. I guess the last thing I would say on that, everyone listening should understand you're going to fall off the wagon a lot. Everybody mm-hmm. does. It's part of yeah. being human. Just get back on track as many times as it takes and don't ever give up. Just use that as rocket fuel to say, okay, that drained my energy. I'm going to do it differently next time. Mm-hmm. And just yeah. keep learning. And yeah, I find keeping track of what life teaches me keeps me as much as possible from repeating bad lessons or bad mm-hmm. mistakes. And that's, a source of empowerment and self-encouragement.
Wonderful.
Oh, thank you, Gina.
Yeah.
So We'll make sure to list all of those resources that Gina mentioned in our show notes. And I also want to just mention a couple other resources for anyone who may be struggling right now. And we'll also link to those in the show notes. There's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, the Veterans Crisis Line. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration has a lot of good resources. And then there's a resource from the Behavioral Health Treatment Services. It's a locator to help you find treatment opportunities in your area. And like I said, we'll list all of those in the show notes.
Perfect. So that's all the time we have for today. But before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better. Are you ready, Gina?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be. Go for it.
Okay, first question.
I had my protein shake this morning, so yeah.
Nice. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, it's Carly Simon, You're So Vain.
What advice would you give your younger self?
Trust yourself.
What's your favorite PG-rated curse word?
Damn it, it's always cathartic. what's the other one? Vista. I guess Vista is a good curse word. Microsoft Vista, are you familiar with it?
Yeah.
Horrible operating system, but a pretty good expletive.
That is hilarious.
Vista. It's just, that's hilarious. You know, I grew up with a lot of curse words, so I have a wide palette to choose from.
All right. Who's your favorite superhero?
Gee, Carol Burnett was my hero growing up.
Aw.
I know. I know. And I'm resigned to the fact that I'm never going to do a project with her, but yeah.
What is your favorite time of the year?
Probably summer. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get much better than summer. I'm warming up to fall as I get older, but summer, yeah.
If you could change one thing about the web, what would it be?
I think there'd be more consistency. Yeah. Easier, you know, like I want us all to log out the same way on every site.
A good, consistent user experience.
Is that too much to ask?
It shouldn't be.
What are three words that describe you?
Loyal, intense, motivated.
How about three words that describe your work?
Empowering, encouraging, inspiring.
What's your favorite meal of the day?
Breakfast. It's your reward for getting up.
All right, Gina, last question. Coffee or tea?
Coffee. It's a question that answers itself.
Nice. So that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining the show, Gina.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It was a delight, and I hope some of this was helpful to our audience.
In case any of our listeners wanted to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
I am on Twitter pretty actively. So Gina DeLampa is my handle. You can go to ultimatereminders.com. Those are probably the best places. The pep talk is a great way to stay in touch. That's how I stay in touch with most of my readers and followers. So you could sign up on my website or, again, text pep talk to 66866. That will give us a way to connect on a weekly basis.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Gina. Leah and I both loved your book, and we're so glad we were able to share your reminders with our listeners today.
Oh, thanks. I'm honored.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency invested in education and social good. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsors. Many thanks to Foster Maid and Tower.
We'd also like to thank our hosting partner, Arcus Tech.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com.
And if you like this episode and want to support our show, check out our Twitter feed for details about our Patreon launching later this month. Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we're going to talk with Frances Rowland about designing for people struggling with mental health. Be sure to check out controlclickcast.com/schedule for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.